Holiday doorbuster deals are on at Lowe's. Today only, get select one-quart poinsettias and select translucent plant saucers for $1 each. That means for a limited time, you can decorate to get in the Christmas spirit for less. Shop in-store to make sure you don't miss out on big savings all day. But hurry, these offers won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid 11/28, in-store only, limit 16 per person. Selection varies by location, while supplies last.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here we go, 96.5 The Fan Black Friday football coverage live with you until 11 a.m. Mac Morey and Drew Nixon, now joined by former Chiefs defensive lineman Sean Smith. Sean, what's going on, brother? How are you, man?
I'm still recovering, man.
I get that, dude. Let's get to the sad stuff. First off, thanks for joining in, brother. I appreciate that. Even without Fesco and Dusty, I appreciate you making some time. Let's get to the sad, you know, and our woes later. How was your Thanksgiving? Good? You enjoy it?
Yeah, it was cool.
Good meal?
Yeah, I can't complain about that. How about you guys?
It was great. No, it was great, brother. It was awesome. It was fantastic. Sweet potatoes rocked my world. Stuffing, turkey was great. You had a favorite dish?
Not really. I didn't.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I went two plates. Have another two plates today. So no, I'm good. I'm eating my sorrows away, dude. What happened yesterday? Because it just feels like we're seeing the same thing over and over again. What do you point that loss yesterday to?
I feel like they lost yesterday just because. Taking too long to get going. They started the game real early and did what they were supposed to do, but couldn't finish the game like they wanted to. Missed opportunities with Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. He's just trying to do too much instead of just letting the ball go. Defensively, I think we played solid. We just didn't capitalize on the turnovers when we should got the turnovers, you know, that fumble.
Yeah, was that I want to watch like the all-22 of that or whatever, because I haven't seen any other clips. But that to me, watching that live, I was like, why aren't we on that first? Why isn't the Chiefs defense running to that ball? What did you see? Was that just luck? Was that just bad luck?
I'll say bad luck a little bit, but also Tranquil was there, but yeah. He didn't reach out for the ball. I don't know. He was like in slow motion. That was like a turning point right there. That could have been the momentum that we needed, and we didn't get it.
Yeah, dude.
Just don't know.
You mentioned Mahomes, and obviously he's always one of the biggest talking points, but Andy Reid, him, the offense, the lulls, multiple straight three and outs yesterday, five punts to Dallas's one. It just feels like so consistently they lose rhythm. Just talk about the last 3 weeks. Like, how would you grade Mahomes recently?
I'm a great. Mahomes just tried to do too much, man. I said that before on the show. I continue to say that he's a great quarterback. He helped us get the Super Bowls we got. It's just come a point in time where you just can't always try to put the team on your shoulders and try to make everything work when you got 10 other guys out there on the field with you and you're trying to do your job. He's just, I don't know, and I can't say the play calling was bad. I mean, Kelce dropped balls, Rice dropped balls. Still was in the game, but we didn't make that special teams play. We didn't do nothing drastic to separate ourselves. You know what I mean? Ran the ball pretty decent. Probably should have stuck with it a little longer.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Sean, it feels like this is something that we've talked about really the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, where is this thing salvageable? Can they find a way to just make it to the playoffs? Right. It seems like they have to win out now to give themselves the best chance. Do you think that based on what you've seen here, particularly these last couple weeks, that this team is capable of doing that?
Yeah, I mean, show times and show spurts when we could be that team to win and blow teams out. And we just, it's what, 6 games left?
Yeah.
We got to win out. It's not even, I can't sugarcoat it. I can't even sit here and tell you, like, yeah, man, I got the magical answer right now. It's just, you're on a week-to-week basis. And you pray that the other teams in the division lose. And balance back up. But, you know, the loss that's going to come back to haunt us is that Jacksonville game.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
I hate talking about that, but you know what I mean? But that's the game. And, you know, the difference from this year and last year's team is the Denver Broncos are us this year.
Mm.
You know, when we was in all those close games and we're down by one, you know what I mean, close games, and we won it all. This year we haven't won one close game like that.
Some of it feels like luck with close games, obviously, but also it's just execution down the stretch. And it feels like it's just something with this team that's a little bit different, where it is a drop pass, as you said. It's a blitz that doesn't quite get home, and it's a big play. It's a penalty. Something, it feels like there's been a little bit of luck involved or bad luck involved, rather, with everything, but also it's just things aren't quite clicking the same way that they did, even though the personnel is all relatively similar to that of what the Chiefs had last season.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I just don't understand the personnel. I mean, I wouldn't just say it's the personnel. I mean, we got some still majority of the roster back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same roster. Just, we're not capitalizing. And like you said, you see yesterday, even Chris Jones on that touchdown run, he thought it was a pass. Made a great move, but if he stayed inside, it wouldn't have been.
Wouldn't have been, yeah.
Williams wouldn't have got that run. It's kind of like the Jacksonville situation a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and the front four has been an issue all season. It's been an issue for the last couple of years. It feels like consistently they can't get to the quarterback with four, Sean, and I know that that's your position. That's your bread and butter. Like, I know you watch other teams play, and I know you watch them get to the quarterback. Is it, you mentioned the personnel being the same, like, is it an archetype thing? Like, I know Spags likes that bigger, thicker, taller defensive end. Do we need like a bend, get around the corner fast edge rusher? Do we need to change our archetype of player that we're bringing into the building? Like, well, why can't they get to the QB?
I mean, yeah, 56, you know, they paid him and he hasn't done nothing. I just don't understand that. You know what I mean? You paid the kid and the kid was not producing. I don't know. I just feel like right now I'm not going to say we're in a rebuild stage, but it's about to get ready to get close to that. You know what I mean? And I wouldn't be surprised in the offseason if they did get rid of Chris Jones. Try to scrap this whole thing. We don't make the playoffs. I think they're going to scrap everything.
Chris Jones and
on
what else?
On the defensive side.
On the defensive side? Okay, would you get rid of McDuffie?
Yeah, offensive side, you're still going to have the same guys. I mean, the receivers, you can't do nothing with that speed. If anything, you know, 87 is probably going to retire. You got to find another, you know, draft a tight end. But I don't know. I'm still optimistic. There's 6 games left, and we'll see what happened with the 6 games and see what they do. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's where
we can still just, because I know if we get in the playoffs, we're scary.
That's my thing, too. If you can get to the dance, they can beat anyone, and they have that experience, then they have that veteran just medal to them. So I do agree with that, but, man, it's going to be tough to get there. The other optimistic point of view that you could point out, Sean, is like that Cowboys offense, they are good. Like, that's a talented offense that they played yesterday. It's probably the most talented offense they'll play in the regular season for the rest of the season. So that is that positive note that you could point to. But, man,
it's positive, but if you go back and look at the film, I don't know what our corners was doing. We let Pickens beat us every time inside on the slant. I'm not even a DB, and I know take the slant away from him, use the sideline as your help. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I don't know what Watson was. I don't know where he was at yesterday.
Watson. I mean, McDuffie, Chamari Connor, all these guys getting cooked. I mean, you mentioned reset, Sean. Are you looking at 22? Are you looking at McDuffie possibly?
Yeah, but I've never been a strong candidate for McDuffie. He's just been a guy that's been around, and he made plays, but then sometimes he stuck.
Say
it like that. I mean, he was getting burned. He's getting cooked. So with him being cooked like that, I mean, we got to find something. Even Cook, our safety, he got to do better. It was like bad angles, missed tackles, stuff that we normally wouldn't do.
So I guess final question before we get you out of here, Sean. And again, I appreciate you giving us some time here, brother. You got to blame one guy after this. Chiefs don't make the playoffs. 6 games left. They don't end up doing it. They come up short. You've got to point to one finger to one guy. What's your blame game?
I'm blaming 15.
Okay.
15's the face of the organization, so he has to take everything under the chin, no matter what. Love him to death. You know, if it's 13 seconds on the clock, I know he can still make something happen in the game and do certain things. But that's the thing about being the face of an organization. When you win and ride the highs and lows, you're the face. You know, and then when you're taking sacks like that, when you just get rid of the ball because you're looking for the home run every time, just take the check down. Just take the check down.
I mean, dude, he had that one where he just stood there. He was just standing there. Throw it. Go. Do something. Yeah, it felt like his internal clock.
Not even just throw it. Run. You see, late in the fourth quarter, then he wants to run. I'm like, bro, you should have been doing that like you did in the early in the game. Run.
100%. Yeah, face of the franchise. It comes with the pros, comes with the cons as well. You've got a lot of the weight on your shoulders. Sean, we appreciate you, brother. Thanks for coming on. And go get a sativa and enjoy the rest of the day here.
All right, man. You guys too, man. Have a great one.
All right, brother. Yeah, thank you, dude. That's Sean Smith, former Chiefs defensive lineman, who come on and join us. Man, he points to 15 at the end there.
Look, do you blame him? Like, I think I look more at Andy Reid at this point of the season. I think I look more at Andy Reid.
Me too.
But
me too.
I mean,
I get where he's coming from.
But I think it's hard to fault him though, because there's moments in the game where you're. Now, not that you're asking yourselves what is Patrick Mahomes doing actually, but there are some plays where it's like, man, the throws are just not on the deep ball. He's not even giving it an opportunity for there to be pass interference almost. Like it feels like there's not enough air on the ball.
Yep.
At times he's trying to missile it in, and there's also times where he's just missing guys, and I don't
missing
know.
Missing high. Missing like he's throwing. I mentioned yesterday, I was like, he's throwing to Wembanyama? Like, what's going on?
I don't know if it's a – he thinks the pocket is collapsing on him early, but it's not. But Tony Romo has mentioned, I think the past couple – because they've had 4 games in a row now. I think it's been the last 2 or 3 games where Tony Romo has been like, Pat needs to stay in the pocket. The pocket's fine. Like, he doesn't need to move. He's fine where he's at. I think he's real. He thinks that the pocket's collapsing, and maybe that's a lack of trust in the offensive line or whatever it is. But it feels like something's off with Pat. Like he's not. And I think it's hard to explain because like he'll put up the numbers. Like his numbers looked okay yesterday. His numbers looked all right. But it doesn't feel like the same Patrick Mahomes who could hang 50 on your defense or 40 on your defense and just rip your heart out. Like it doesn't, there's still, it's still in there somewhere, but it doesn't feel like it's something you have to really, really worry about 100% of the time, I guess, if that makes sense, which sounds kind of crazy saying, but
it's
I think
the truth,
but based on what we've seen, I don't think you can say anything different than that.
No, it's one play, it's the best thing you've ever seen, and the next, he's not doing the fundamentals, he's not doing the basics, the 1-2-3 hitch, throw, look off, hit the guy coming out of your out route with the timing. There are multiple things that just seem a little bit off, and again, I point a lot of those reasons why that stuff, the why, to Big Red.
That comes back
all to Big Red. Not all of it, but a lot of it. Like sometimes, like, right, you have to hit the deep ball. If it's open, it's open. Like, that's on you. Rashee Rice, that touchdown in the corner last week, off an out route against the Colts, like, you have to hit that ball. It has to happen. And there's trust issues there, too, with both the offensive line, the weapons, I think, could probably be mentioned. But I think more than anything, I think it is Andy Reid, the stagnant scheme and the predictable play calling at this point. we talked a lot of offense. We talked to Sean Smith. He mentioned some of the defensive woes that have happened as well and some of the changes that he thinks maybe they should go under. He mentioned Chris Jones. He mentioned 22.
Yeah.
This could be a big reset. He mentioned rebuild was the word he used as well. Lots of changes in Kansas City could be coming, but not for the next hour and 45 minutes. It is Drew Nixon. It is Mac Morey live with you. Black Friday football coverage right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for the Kansas City Chiefs. Back in on a Friday morning, Black Friday morning, 96.5 The Fan here on Black Friday football coverage. Drew Nixon with you, myself, Mac Morey with you live for the next hour and 40 minutes until 11 a.m. until we hand it off to Jay Binkley. Oh, and he's in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's here.
I will tell you this. You have to wait for Bink as well. You have to listen to Bink as well. You have to listen. He is as fired up as I have ever seen him.
Oh, buddy. He is ready. He is ready.
He is prepped and ready to go. He probably doesn't even need any prep.
No.
He has no notes.
No, there's no doc.
He is going to give you 3 hours with JT of nothing but a very, very good part of radio that you don't want to miss. Three hours of great radio.
It's gonna be good because he's a little heated today.
Don't think, just do. Piss me off.
Yeah, dude. No, he's ready.
That guy's an idiot, man.
He's going to.
That game last night really pissed me off, to be honest with
he's
you.
He's pissed. He's pissed.
If he doesn't say that today, that exact line, actually.
He is. He's going to come in today. He's going to start his show.
That game last night really pissed me off, to be honest with you.
And he's right. It pissed me off, too.
Well, I don't think that.
Yeah, so we got Jay Binkley and JT live from 11 to 2, and then it is your guy, Carrington. No days off, Carrington. C-Dot live from 2 to 5. I believe, and he'll have Nathan in, right?
Oh, is it Nathan? I believe it'll be JT. Maybe not.
No, it's JT with Jay, but I think it's Nathan with C-Dot.
Yes, I do believe so.
Yes, I do believe that is the case. Yes, JT with Jay.
Hey, well, yo, man.
All right, let's get to it.
We have an endless.
Oh, dude, we could keep going.
Hey, baby, how you doing?
No, it's really.
I literally pissed my pants and forgot who the hell I am for the last 3 days.
Boobs are great.
Okay. Hey, we needed a laugh today. We needed a laugh today because, man, I'm pissed off because another day, another Chiefs loss, another game,
and
another multiple moments, multiple times where you could have taken it over. You start the game, and you mentioned it earlier, Drew, you get a possession given back to you. You get a short field.
Straight out of the gate.
Out of the gate, and you score. You take advantage. You're up 7-0. It's like you actually got the ball to start with.
What else?
And you're up 14-0, or you're up 14-7, and you don't score again for the rest of the half. You don't score again until late in the third quarter. Mm. You have four straight three and outs. Mm. You have double-digit penalties. You have triple-digit yards in penalty yards. You have missed opportunity. Drop. Boring play calls. No pressure from the defensive line. Barbecue chicken out in the secondary. Random players playing, no rhythm as far as who's going to be in the game and when. Feels like we've got a coaching staff that just says, you know what, screw all these players on the sideline. I like these few guys, and I'm going to play them. No Noah Williams, no Christian Fulton. Jaden Hicks, he's going to be in coverage. Shamari Connor, you remember how good he's been all season? We'll get ready for more of it. All these things that we keep watching don't change. And so I am... Today, I'm here pissed off, just like you'll hear Jay Binkley pissed off for the next few hours, because there should be answers here, Drew. This shouldn't keep happening.
Yeah,
six times.
Well, I think that's where, you know, going back to what Sean Smith said, I know you teased it to talk about the defense in particular, because
yes.
I think there's aspects where you look at who is next technically to be paid in this little tier, if you will. Who is up next?
Who's next in line?
It is Trent McDuffie. He's the guy. And technically,
not after
Chris
yesterday.
Jones also. Chris Jones is next in line from the standpoint of just getting an extension or figuring out the $40 million cap hit that he's supposed to have next year. I don't think the Chiefs want to pay that. Do you want to figure it out? I do think what Sean Smith, what he brought up, though, is interesting. Not necessarily to Trent McDuffie's standpoint, because I think there's an aspect of Trent McDuffie's game where I think some of him not being brought up is actually part of the reason why he's so good, just because teams kind of avoid throwing to him. Not in the sense of he's Darrell Revis
yeah.
or
no, but yeah.
But I think that to an extent teams do kind of stay away from throwing his way because he traditionally has been very good against number one wide receivers. Every now and then you find players traditionally with size like Cortland Sutton or CeeDee Lamb, bigger guy, or George Pickens, bigger guy, or A.J. Brown. Like, there's a few that can cause problems for Trent McDuffie. He's up next to get paid. Moving on from him, we've actually brought it up on Cody and Gold before. Would you trade him for two first-round picks? And
in a heartbeat.
But this is the thing.
And I would have said that before yesterday, to be clear.
But this is the thing, though, I think with it. And I think maybe it's a little bit more. It's not a good time to have this take, I guess. It was better then, maybe. But it's not a good time to have this because he's coming off of the bad game. But are you sure you can replace Trent McDuffie with those two picks? Are you sure that you can replace a top five level player at their position?
Yes.
Because I'm not sure where the picks are, but
he's done it.
Are we, and this is where I also kind of get to it. Are we sure that that Andy Reid and Brett Veach are gonna draft the right players? Are we sure that we're gonna see them play to start the season? I would assume so because they're first round picks. But based on what we have seen, are we sure that they're gonna play right away? And you're going to get that production immediately? I would think yes, but to think that you can just get a player like Trent McDuffie right away, I would be a little hesitant to trade him for that, where I think Sauce Gardner, I think the same thing kind of with the Jets, where, yeah, they've loaded up on these picks, but are you sure that the Jets are going to get a player capable of being a top two, top three corner, a top three player at their position?
No, it's the Jets.
So, and maybe that's where the line is kind of drawn in the sand here. I actually would be all for them moving on from Chris Jones because it allows you to spend more money in free agency.
They can't. Like, I know, well, Sean mentioned that, and that's great, all awesome.
Hang on, so if they don't, let's say they let Chris Jones walk, or they'd have to trade him, I
yes,
suppose.
Yes, they'd have to trade him.
So they theoretically speaking, which I know people love on this show whenever I hypothetically speak. I got called out on Wednesday for it. I don't know if you know that.
Okay.
I got called a kitten because of hypothetically speaking. We're going to do it right now, though. Hypothetically speaking, the Chiefs would have to rework his deal, correct? And then trade him? Because nobody's going to trade for Chris Jones and pay him $40 million.
No, of course not.
That's the way it would have to work, right?
His cat, that's what I'm saying, like, The Chiefs can't cut him because he's got a dead cap of $48 million next season. He's got a cap hit the next 3 years of 44, 38, 44. Now, in 2027, there is a potential out. So you have to keep him at next year. If you have to keep Chris Jones is on the team next season. Like that's happening. Chris Jones is a Kansas City Chief next year. And frankly, like, I'm okay with that. I think he's been productive for the most part. Not for the most part. He's been productive these last few weeks. I don't think he's washed. I still think he's got a lot left.
I don't think he is either.
He's got multiple years of productivity left. I point to the defensive line issues around him. That's where I point.
Like, 100%.
Like the pressure rate yesterday with five-man pressure, 14%, not even 16, 14% pressure rate when they rushed five.
Did you see the tweet that Nate put out yesterday?
No.
I believe this was in the first half. This was at halftime. According to Next Gen Stats, George Karloftis has only one pressure on 16 pass rushing snaps. And listen, that's not one sack. That's one pressure.
Yeah.
He ain't even getting home.
Oh,
and correct me if I'm wrong, did Tyler Guyton play yesterday?
I don't know. I'd have to look at that.
I don't remember.
I can't
remember. I know that obviously you're talking about tackles. If Tyler Guyton didn't play, they were down a tackle. And you weren't getting a pressure. You get one pressure in the first half. I think to Sean's point, you know, you paid the man, and he's not producing consistently enough for a guy that you would want to pay.
Yeah, Tyler Guyton didn't play.
And George Karloftis, who they just paid. This, again, to your point, this is not about Chris Jones. This is a situation around him. I agree with you. We didn't see Charles Omenihu get home at all. We didn't see George Karloftis get home at all. We didn't see Ashton Gelati get home.
None
at all.
Of these guys get home.
And
Chris Jones is the only one making any sort of havoc.
And that was part of the complaint at the trade deadline is, well, you didn't make a move, but then you go back to history. Well, they've made moves for defensive linemen, and they haven't done anything with them. Like, they traded for Josh Uche last season, and he barely played. So,
and guess what? He's killing it over in Philly.
So are we sure that he would play based on what the Chiefs do? No, but This is the reason why when Nate came on the show fresh after the day of the trade deadline and said, they're going to have to rely on Ashton Gelati and he's the guy that has to step up. We haven't seen it. And as a result, this defensive line continues to be exactly what it was. And that's Chris Jones gets doubled. Every now and then he's able to win because he's Chris Jones and nobody else is there to help him.
No,
and if he got some help, whether it's Charles Omenihu or whether it's George Karloftis, then maybe we would see a bit of a change. But I think this is where the lack of aggressiveness, if you will, at the trade deadline is kind of hurting them. And then we'll see what happens in the draft. But I mean, you've got a defensive line need. Is that the direction that you go? I know Binks fired up to talk about weapons. Do you look elsewhere other than defensive line? I think it has to be defensive line that you draft. But if we're talking rebuild and we're looking at that broad situation, what it means, they got to address defensive line from the draft standpoint, right? Or are they not going to play him?
I mean, they'll play someone that's back. I mean,
there's so many questions with this team that it's questions about who they draft. It's also questions about whether the rookie plays. It's about them getting production or lack thereof across the board. Still can't cover a person out of the linebacker position.
No. Oh, God,
they're
no.
In quicksand.
God, no. And that's harder to find. And I wouldn't have paid Nick Bolton. Right. But they did. And here we are. Jeffrey Bassa was supposed to be
a great run defender. Nick Bolton's
great.
And Spags trusts him. I get it.
Yeah, I get it. But that's the thing. Nick Bolton's trusted by Spags. Spags has his guys. And once you're in that ring of trust with Spags, to a fault, you are played. To a fault, you are in the game. And to a fault, you are trusted. And I think Karloftis is now in that circle of trust. And I think he got let in too early. I don't think he should be there yet. And I don't care. Listen, again, this is advanced stats guy over here. This is EPA, this is DVOA guy over here. I don't care about his pressure rate anymore. I'm watching the games. At some point, listen, you've got to take the eye test as well. And the eye test, George Karloftis says, I don't know, that quarterback doesn't give a rip about his quote-unquote pressures. He's the king of being a step late. He's the king of being a second short. Yeah. It's mind-boggling. And frankly, like, I knew the contract was going to look better and better just because this is the way contracts, especially with this position, work. They're going to get higher and higher. The value is going to increase and increase. So as bad as that contract looked when it happened, it looks better now, even with his poor play. So it's not just that the contract isn't great because it's not a great contract. It's not as bad as some people would like to say. It's the fact that he has not gotten better. You paid a guy a little more than he was already worth, saying, okay, the contracts are going to ascend. So this value, this percentage of the cap that you're saying it takes up isn't going to be relevant, one. And then two, he's going to improve and he's going to get better. I trust this player and this development. And we have not seen it.
I think, and for anyone's sake, quit looking at Chris Jones through Chiefs colored glasses. He is terrible in all caps, by the way, from this texter. First of all, you got to know, Drew is not looking through this through a Chiefs colored lens at all whatsoever. I don't look through things
that
way.
And
I assume, I don't think Mac does that either. I don't think very many people at this station look through things from a Chiefs colored lens, but I will say,
I've trashed Chris Jones in the past. He's had three good games in a row.
Yeah.
Really good games.
And I think that part is because the texture, they referenced Chris Jones not playing was not George Karloftis' fault, but Chris Jones. But by our logic, Karloftis isn't getting it done because Chris Jones isn't getting it done, which is not true because Chris Jones is dealing with two people. George Karloftis is dealing with one.
Yes.
George Karloftis is not getting double teamed. If George Karloftis was getting double teamed, then Chris Jones would probably be a lot more productive.
He's going on one-on-one, and as you already laid out, he's going one-on-one with a backup tackle, and he is not winning.
I know. Chris Jones is, if anything, he's providing the opportunities for these guys to eat, and they're not eating, which makes the contract to George Karloftis not look that good is what I think at least I'm coming from that standpoint is, especially because they paid him. I thought they should have paid McDuffie before they paid George because the jury was still kind of out on George Karloftis, in my opinion. He had done well, but I think they needed to see that extra step before you pay somebody money. Let me see what they thought because to me, and I think there's been aspects of it, I guess, if you will, Mac, but stay with me. What I would have wanted to see if I was the Chiefs is, before we pay you, let me see you go on a dominant sort of a run where you're not Chris Jones dominant, but you are getting a sack for two or three straight games. Let me see you put constant pressure on the quarterback and you're getting multiple quarterback pressures in a game. I want to see that not just once or twice. I want to see it in a stretch of 3 to 4 games. Show us what your peak looks like so we give you this money. I don't think he's shown them the peak enough. And maybe we didn't really, and maybe it was hard to evaluate these players until Chris Jones is gone. Like it, when Chris Jones is gone, maybe that's where you get the full evaluation of, okay, how good is Omar Norman Lott? How good is Ashton Gelati actually? Because if you're not getting pressure when another guy on your line is getting double teamed, then how are we going to expect you to do anything when nobody's getting double teamed and taking an extra player away from you? I don't know.
Exactly. What's it like? What's it going to be like when you don't have a top five guy?
What is it
going to
look like when Chris Jones is, they might be one of the least productive defensive lines in football, period. And they already kind of are.
And they already kind of are with Chris Jones, who I believe, and not even I believe, he is still elite. He is still one of the best at his position. Every coach talks about him like that way. And if you've seen the last three games that Kansas City's played, he has showed up in that way. He has been winning. He's had TFLs. He has been there. You're right. Karlaftis is getting one-on-ones because he's there. And he's not always going to be there. And if you can't win now, what's it going to be like in a couple years? And from the 816, he's got no secondary move. He doesn't.
And this is part. This is the thing, too, where the fact that you got paid, now the clock is ticking on. Now all eyes are on you. As soon as you get the money, you're getting paid more. You got to step up and be one of the best players on this defense. I mean, is George Karlaftis one of the five best players on defense? I think so. But
that's because the talent level isn't that great.
I think it's, Chris Jones, Trent
Chris
McDuffie.
Jones after that, it's McDuffie and Chris Jones, and we saw what McDuffie really is sometimes.
Yeah, and then I think George Karlaftis, I would say, is third, but at the same time,
we've seen Chris Jones, what he can be from times to times now that he's past the age of 30.
Yeah.
This defensive, and this is what I'm pointing to, like, it's, everything's connected. Like, Spags not playing some certain people, as you mentioned, like that's part of it. Spags having a certain type
who
of edge rusher that he likes.
Good things like Noah Williams. Yeah.
Noah Williams, Josh Uche and another team now with the Eagles. And I know he has one sack. He's got a lot of pressures. He's got multiple QB hits. He's more than Karlaftis has been for sure. And then you look at, him not playing certain players, certain guys not getting snaps, or him having a certain archetype of a guy that he likes that may be outdated, right? Like that bigger, slower Gelati Karlaftis edge rather than a Josh Uche, Micah Parsons, Will Anderson type edge, all of those things hindering this defense. And then also Brett Veach simply not bringing in a lot of the talent that needs to be here as well.
I think he has
to answer the call on some of this as well.
It is interesting because if you look at the way that they've kind of built things, it feels like they not necessarily get complacent with the defense, but based on what they've been the last couple of years, we're going to address offense more in these early picks with Xavier Worthy and Josh Simmons and Rashee Rice. It's worked out, obviously, for those guys. But by doing that, you're relying on the development of your coaches to make sure that Jalen Watson is consistently good, to make sure that Chamari Connor is going to continue to develop, to make sure that George Karlaftis will continue to be better. That and I know Omar Norman Lott got hurt, that's where the eyes will be on now is you're drafting guys in the second, third, or fourth round where, yes, Veach hits on some of those, but from the standpoint of developing these players, you're relying on your top picks being on offense and you're not dedicating those resources, at least over the last couple of years, it feels like, to defense. Where now, it's kind of flipped where, okay, the offense is kind of getting set up to be good. Do they go defensive heavy again early on? To try to replace, to try to get more talent just up front in general, but also potentially at linebacker and the back end of the defense as well. I think there's a lot of different ways that they can go about it in terms of how they fix the issues that they have. So they don't have any money in free agency, at least right now, correct?
They won't have a lot this offseason.
Unless they trade Chris Jones, or does that still not matter? Like if they could
trade Chris Jones, that would take off. Yeah,
if they reconstruct and trade Chris Jones, that would open up money on the books at least
for sure. And I don't think they should do that. To be clear, I think Chris Jones should be a part of this personally. I think trading Trent McDuffie is a thing. I think if you can trade George Karlaftis, that would be a thing. But no, you're right. They don't have a lot of wiggle room as of now. It's going to have to be another year of drafting, and I think that's a good segue because I know we got to go, but real quick, I know we got to go. We know the 2022 draft. Everyone talks about that from Brett Veach, right? It's the McDuffie, Josh Williams, Pacheco helped out this team for a long time. Chennault, right? Some really solid players in that draft.
Yep.
Can we just look at the others real quick? 2020.
Let's do it.
2020. Clyde. Willie Gay. Fine. Second round pick.
No longer here.
No longer here, right? Lucas Niang. Yeesh. Sneed. No longer here, but great couple years. Good draft pick in the fourth round. Great draft pick. Mike Dana. Fine. Fifth round, it's fine. Trey Smith. Sixth round pick. Good, but that was, again, not scouting, not development. This is not us finding a diamond in the rough. This is a medical. This is the same.
Still, though, it still counts as a hit, even if it was a first-round pick.
It counts as a hit. I'm just pointing out the fact that this is not scouting. I'm just trying to find a theme here. This is not a guy finding talent in the rough when other people don't see it.
I got you.
Corner Powell, never worked out. Noah Gray, it's fine. Kando, never even heard of this guy. Joshua Kando in the fourth round. Creed Humphrey, obviously we know. And Nick Bolton, obviously we know, has been solid as a second-round pick. 2022, we've gone through it, but let's just go through it again, because McDuffie, everyone talks about Karlaftis. We're talking about Karlaftis in a little bit of a different light. That's a first-round pick right now, Karlaftis. Sky Moore in the second round. Brian Cook has some huge deficiencies. Joshua Williams didn't play yesterday. Darian Kennard, Watson, we saw his deficiencies. Seventh-round pick, though, we'll take it. Pacheco, Nazi Johnson. Now, let's look at this. 2023, FAU, you get Rashee Rice in the second round, then you get Wanye Morris, Chamari Connor, BJ Thompson, Keandre Coburn, Nick Jones. You got Rashee Rice in 2023. That's what you got. In 2024, Xavier Worthy, we can talk about him. I'm not happy. Kingsley has looked good at guard. Jared Wiley, we know nothing. Jaden Hicks can't cover. Hunter Norzad, never going to play. Kamal Haddon, LOL, CJ Hansen. You've got Kingsley as a guard that you drafted at a tackle position, and you had to move because he was unplayable at the position you drafted him at. And Xavier Worthy looks to be a gadget guy. And this year, you lucked into Josh Simmons. That's what's happened. Any free agency ads that I'm missing?
It almost, like, if you're going to fall back on 2020, that was almost 4 years ago.
Exactly.
And now we're at the point where you're paying guys. And George Karlaftis, somebody brought up his numbers real quick before we go, because I know we do need to take a break from the 402. This person put out George's production numbers. I'm just going to give, he's having as good of a season, actually, as his rookie year, believe it or not.
Who, Karlaftis?
From a pressure standpoint, which actually was his best year from a pressure standpoint, his rookie season. Sack-wise, second year was the best one at 10.5. Through, what are we now through? 12 games, he has 5 sacks. He's on pace for maybe the season he had last year, and that's 8 sacks with 37 pressures. He has 52 pressures, though, so he's done a better job, particularly earlier in the year with the pressures. He was doing actually very well, where Chris Jones wasn't in the beginning of the season.
But when you watched, and again, I'm a pressures guy, I understand they're very valuable, but did you feel that? Did you feel like he was getting to the QB a lot? Like as much as Aiden Hutchinson was getting to the QB? Because that's what I got from the text line for the first 7 weeks.
I agree. I don't think it was to that standpoint, but I could tell that, you know, George was getting around. I will say this, though, and this, I think, is part of the problem. He is on pace for the same sacks as he had last year. He got paid after last year based on what, Mac? You just said a few minutes ago. Based on what he could be.
What he's going to be.
He's not improved.
He's not.
And I think that's where the problem is that If this same thing happens next year with George Karlaftis, then I'll be honest. I know that the money looks fine. It's a bad deal. You use the money when you could have just when you could have just either found another option or dedicated the money to something else and potentially Chris Jones' replacement, and then you drafted a couple more edge rushers or, you know, whatever the case is. If it happens again next year and he's on this pace where he's going to be worse than he was, he's not having a career best season after you get paid, then it's a problem, and you start to wonder if you wasted your money, even though the deal looks good.
100%. You paid that, like, tier 2 money to a guy who's not quite there, but he's going to be above that, you thought. So it's like, wow, it's going to be a deal. And now you're paying that tier 2 money to...
He's pacing to have a similar season from a sack perspective.
Yeah, what looks to just be like, he's a mid player. That's what he is.
He's fine. He's never going to be that guy on your line.
He's fine. So. He's fine. We've got a lot to talk about and a lot to go over. An hour and 15 minutes left with you. And in 15 minutes, Josh Briscoe coming on the show.
That's right.
Our guy Briscoe will be joining us. Make sure you're a part of the show as well. 913-586-7965. We are live on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, and Facebook. The Fan 965. Make sure you watch our beautiful faces there. Drew Nixon's going to take over. I'm Mac Morey. We're live with you for the next hour and 15 minutes right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for the Kansas City Chiefs.
We are back, Black Friday football coverage here on 96.5 The Fan. Drew Nixon, Mac Morey, reacting to the Chiefs falling to 6-6 today. Had Sean Smith earlier. You'll be able to hear it on the podcast page for Fesco and Dusty in a little bit. We're going to make sure we get the hours posted so you guys can listen to the show. Josh Briscoe coming up here in about 10 minutes time.
Love it.
I want to take a step away. Not necessarily from the Chiefs exactly, but this is something that I thought of over the course of time here. I guess the last couple weeks I've been thinking about this more as I've been watching sports. But Pablo Torre had a tweet that came
Pablo.
Out. Good old Pablo. This has nothing to do with Bill Belichick, I promise. Mark Cuban or Steve Ballmer or anything else like
or,
that.
Or Jordan.
Yeah. But I've been finding myself into this position. I want to know if you have as well, where I'm making bets and our fandom, I think, is changing. So much so that we're not even as interested in the teams that we root for anymore. We're just interested to see if our bets hit. And I think of how it's changed fandom. So obviously this is, you know, a little bit of a change of speed, but I think it relates well because we all bet. I bet on the Chiefs game yesterday. Did not win, unfortunately. I don't know if you bet anything yesterday.
I did. Did not win.
But
I won a couple dry bets. I was doing some live betting stuff, but yeah.
Yeah. I was doing some live stuff as well. But Pablo Torre had a comment basically that legal gambling could spell the end of sports, quote unquote, cultural supremacy as fans root for payouts rather than teams. And I thought this was really interesting just from the standpoint of how we watch sports. I don't think it's changed any of the way that you have watched Chiefs games because ultimately, I think in the end, we're all fans of teams in particular, and we want our teams to win. But I do think there is a level to this conversation as it pertains to the betting side of things because I have friends who will legitimately bet. So like my friends back home in Indiana, they will bet on the Colts to lose. But the roof of the Colts. But they
so
want
it's like they're hedging their happiness.
Yeah, they're hedging their happiness.
Yes.
Is that where we're at? I don't know if any of you have done that.
I've done that before. Not with the Chiefs. I wouldn't do that with the Chiefs.
I was going to say, I feel like with the Chiefs, it would be a no. But with your fan, is this something that people do on a regular basis now? And is it affecting the way that we like...
it's definitely affected the way...
Root for teams?
100%.
Like, my team didn't win, but you know what? My fantasy football team did good this week.
100%.
Or I won some money on betting, and that helps make up for our fandom, where all of a sudden you're watching games not because you're actually enjoying the sport, but because you want a bet to hit. Like, I think that betting can make our enjoyment of sports more significant. We pay more attention to different things. But it's also, we're not watching it for the enjoyment of the sport. It's you're locked into a certain player, and if they don't get their numbers, then you're a little bit irritated.
Yeah, I think, we get so caught up with he didn't do this, he didn't do this. Well, it's like he had one awesome catch, but it wasn't, three catches, and you had him over under for three, so you're not going to care about the one great catch or one great play that a guy made.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you made a bet for the team that the team that you root for is playing against. And so now all of a sudden, because of your bet has one leg left in the parlay, you're now rooting for Michael Pittman against the Colts to get 60 yards. And you need one more drive, and it's like, even if that drive, even if those yards equal a score for the Colts and going in the lead, like, you're still rooting for that because you want your $80 or whatever. Like, it definitely changes things, and I think it also emphasizes that we are the biggest sports fans ever. We've cried tears of joy, tears of sadness for these teams, but hey, put a little money, put a little cash on the line. Those loyalties can die pretty quickly. It is kind of funny to see that in real life.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So from the 785, big Chiefs fan, but I always bet against them. That way I'm happy if they win or lose.
Yeah.
I think that is, and it's...
That's insane to me, but good for you.
I'm not knocking it because obviously, to each their own. But I think is that where we're transitioning to be as sports fans? Is that where we're at now? If the Chiefs lose, then at least I can win some money. But then if the Chiefs win... You're happy they won, but then you lost money. I'll be totally honest. I would much rather, just from the sake of what we do, Mac, I'd like to win my bet maybe if I decide to bet more than a team winning, just in fairness, because you feel like you've wasted money at that point. But it is very interesting, I think, when we look at how we evaluate and watch sports, because we're fed lines, and I think some of this goes into just like the betting stuff in general with the Chauncey Billups stuff. I think this is where it all kind of originates, is just... is this where we're at now, where fans are yelling at players and getting mad at players because of a parlay and telling them to go and
kick rocks?
Yeah. Go and kick rocks and just stop playing and that they suck because, you know, they're not getting
death threats. You know, I mean, that's getting numbers. Ridiculous.
It's just crazy to me. Chris Jones, are you sure you're not betting on Chris Jones' sack total or something like that? Because if you're watching the game, Chris Jones is effective.
100%.
If you're watching players play for the betting standpoint and box scoring, then you might be disappointed more often than not.
Exactly.
And not actually be paying attention to the game and appreciating what you see in the game.
Score watching.
Yeah, I think it becomes where, I mean, we've even asked this question earlier this week is, I think Alex and Cody have mentioned it, but people have texted on the text line. It's like, are you watching the game? Are you seeing what we're seeing? And I think some of it might just be because we're paying attention through sports from a different lens. This person, not for the Chiefs, but if you bet against the Royals, they do every time. I think it's not necessarily a miserable way to be as a sports fan because you eventually cover both bases, I suppose. But and this is why I don't bet on my favorite teams.
Yeah. Well,
traditionally,
I don't bet. Yeah, I very rarely bet on the Chiefs to win or lose. I'm usually doing player props. Last week, I bet on the Chiefs to win. That was the game where I'm like, the Chiefs are winning this game. And so I did that. Didn't feel that way against the Cowboys. Yeah. And what do you know? They ended up losing. Maybe I should have bet on them to win. But yeah, man. Yeah, it has definitely changed the way we perceive these sports, and it changes the way the players perceive us as fans, and that sucks too. So no doubt.
It definitely does. Coming up next, Josh Briscoe, Chiefs pre and post game host, will join the program. We are switching
the big Wicked guy from the 785 loves Wicked.
Yeah, we are definitely going to bring up Wicked and how excited Briscoe is to see the new one, if he hasn't yet.
I think he dressed up as Glinda when he went to go see it.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, I think he wore a wig and everything.
Shout out to Josh. He joins us next. It is Black Friday football coverage. Mac and Drew on the other side. One more hour.
Get ready to shop Lowe's Black Friday doorbuster deals to save $150 on a 30-inch Blackstone griddle, now $299. Plus, choose a Whirlpool top load washer or Midea top freezer refrigerator for just $398. These limited-time doorbuster deals go fast, so get holiday ready today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid 11/28 through 12/1. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.